Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Misinformation on Immigration and Social Media Data Transparency. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Beatrice Lopez, Chief Political and Communications Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Gretchen, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today, you'll be hearing from key experts and researchers who have been tracking the volume, messaging, and impact of disinformation efforts and misinformation targeted at both the American public, including key battleground voters and migrants beyond our borders on social media. As you all know, this is a timely conversation as Facebook faces congressional oversight. You'll hear from these four leading experts on the urgent need for government oversight and greater transparency by social media companies, as well as protections for independent researchers to shed light on the full-scale social and political impact of misinformation campaigns. This targeted messaging, unregulated and unchecked, of false narratives and rhetoric have grave consequences for our democracy and immigration system. In fact, for the past four years, the Immigration Hub has been monitoring the evolution of Republicans and right-wing messaging targeted at battleground voters, including white swing voters in states like Pennsylvania. While former President Trump is gone, both Republicans and right-wing media have normalized ugly, racist rhetoric via social media and the airwaves against immigrants and for the purpose of scoring political points and continuing to create cultural, social, and political divides. As we noted in our collective report with America's Voice, released in July, Republican right-wing entities have centered their strategy to misinform the public and social media users with three top messages: Biden-Harris border crisis, mass amnesty, and COVID-infected migrants and drugs crossing the border. It's no surprise that out of these core messages, the last weeks and months, there has been an uptick of Republican members of Congress, like Laura Borbit, tweeting about an invasion at the border and others fully embracing and amplifying the white replacement theory, while you have Republican Governor Abbott of Texas and DeSantis of Florida peddling lies about migrants coming into their states, increasing the number of COVID cases. In fact, this week on Wednesday, there'll be about over a few governors out there in Texas and at the border. These messages and rhetoric from top influencers and elected officials have been spread through Facebook ads and other social media posts and chatter on private groups. In fact, over a three-month period, America's Voice found more than 700 unique paid ads displayed 52.6 million times on voter social media feeds across different platforms, all relying on anti-immigrant divisive and xenophobic rhetoric. In fact, Representative Matt Rosendale of Montana recently deployed Facebook ads with himself and CBP agents on horseback. Additionally, right-wing media has driven hundreds of thousands of articles on immigration, generating more than 25 million interactions on social media, with right-wing accounts driving the conversation. This is the new normal of hyperboles and misinformation driven through social media and paid campaigns that drive up anti-immigrant sentiment and false narratives about our immigration system and common sense solutions. It's a problem for both the Democratic Party and the Biden administration. Unchecked, this type of misinformation will have consequential impacts in election cycles to come. And more immediately for the Biden administration, other global leaders, unregulated and targeted messages to migrants such as Haitian migrants fleeing Haiti and other countries in South America will have human consequences. As you'll hear from Katie Paul, director of the Tech Transparency Project, human smugglers and other entities have been using Facebook, WhatsApp, and YouTube to target Haitian and other Latin American migrants with false promises and other misinformation. So let's start now with Katie Paul, again, director of the Tech Transparency Project, to give us more insight into this, and then we'll hear from our other leading experts. Thank you. Go ahead, Katie.
Thanks so much. So for the past several months, starting this spring, the Tech Transparency Project started investigating human smuggling on Facebook geared toward Latin America. And what we found was pretty shocking. It's very simple to find human smugglers on Facebook. In some cases, these human smugglers are connected to cartels that are taking advantage of these vulnerable populations. And what we found is that in traditional transnational crime and human smuggling, a human smuggler or a coyote would only be able to get a certain number of people by word of mouth. But because of Facebook, a single post Facebook group for human smuggling with 11,000 people can reach thousands of people in an instant, and it amplifies the opportunities for these human smugglers by also providing them a free service to expand their messaging. A lot of questions we get revolve around whether, if you shut down this issue on Facebook, won't people just move to another platform? And the short answer is no. Yesterday, Nick Clegg on CNN talked about that the third of the world is on Facebook, and people use Facebook because they enjoy it. But in Latin America, that is not the case. Facebook's Internet.org program that it began implementing in 2014 in Latin America essentially provided zero-rated data for Facebook-only products with telecom providers. That means Facebook is the Internet in many Latin American countries, and there is no alternative. There is no option for Facebook because it has zero-rated data. So this is a problem that Facebook solely owns in this part of the world. And it expanded its use in Latin America without also scaling its moderation efforts, even though it had already been reported back in 2014 that coyotes were using the platform for human smuggling. We investigated Facebook's external comms when it comes to human smuggling over the past several years. And since 2015, Facebook has not even bothered to update their public relations statement regarding human smuggling and human trafficking. We have a report from June where we lay out a timeline that shows Facebook's statements on human trafficking issues over the past 6 years, and the statements have done little more than change. Now that we know what the Facebook whistleblower has said, it's clear that Facebook was not only aware that they were facilitating this kind of human trafficking, but based on the Facebook whistleblower's documents, that they were also knowingly profiting from it. And Facebook chose not to do anything about these problems while still making public statements to the press and to lawmakers over the past 6 years that they have been investing people and resources to address human smuggling. But what we're seeing with Latin America and this massive surge of migrants at the border is very closely tied to the amplification of human smuggling opportunities on social media. We're also seeing this targeting Haitian migrants, and this is not just encouraging people to travel to the U.S. or to Mexico, but lots of misinformation that is also going unchecked on the platform, being amplified and encouraging people that if they go to the U.S., they can just try again if they get thrown out because people are getting released early because of COVID. Or if you're pregnant or have children or are single women and you go to the U.S., you have a better opportunity of getting in. Or that the U.S. has a shift of some of the Republican commentary that we've seen that the U.S. has open borders. We're seeing similar misinformation making its way into Creole-speaking and Spanish-speaking communities, encouraging people to then take that dangerous trip to the border. And on Facebook, it's so prevalent, we're even seeing human smugglers offer discounts for children and for women who are traveling alone. Now, this is obviously because women who are traveling alone are more vulnerable, and as a result, the discounts are likely because it's easier to get those women into dangerous situations. But the nexus with all of these things that we've seen is that Facebook has failed on multiple levels, whether it's dealing with criminal enterprises on the platform, cartels, human smuggling, or misinformation. And the perfect storm of this, as well as the platform's ineffective efforts at addressing the problem, have really led to a surge both digitally of human smugglers and a surge on the U.S. border.
Great. Thank you, Katie, for that. And now we'll be hearing from Kelly Suter, Vice President of GQR. GQR has been monitoring and tracking a lot of the misinformation online, unpaid, and through Twitter, et cetera. And you'll hear more about the impact of this. Kelsey, go ahead.
Thank you. So yeah, I just want to take a couple of minutes to focus on the fact that some of what Katie was talking about, the fact that these smugglers exist and that they can be successful on these platforms is in part because they are operating in an environment in which potential migrants and immigrant communities are being told that crossing into the United States is safe, that it's easy, that it's worth attempting. So most recently, GQR's team has been watching this conversation in Haitian Creole specifically. We've seen many Haitian influencers and prominent accounts, particularly on YouTube, encouraging migrants to attempt a U.S. border crossing. We've seen a bunch of false and misleading claims, for example, that single mothers who give birth in Chile or Brazil will receive temporary protected status if they arrive in the U.S. We've seen claims that the Biden administration is going to offer TPS to any Haitian who arrives after May 2021. We've seen content highlighting routes migrants can take. We've also seen accounts sharing contact information for individuals offering under-the-table work in the United States, which, you know, at best gives a sort of rosy picture of what being undocumented in the U.S. is like, and at worst leads to vulnerable people being taken advantage of. So at the same time that that conversation is happening in Creole, in the local language, there is a parallel conversation happening in English to stir up hate and fear of these groups when they do arrive. So on that front, English social media conversation about immigration spiked around the arrival of Haitian migrants at the southern border. And as is usually the case with immigration, right-wing anti-immigration accounts are dominating that conversation. So just one data point on this, from September 15th to the 26th, right-wing anti-immigration accounts were responsible for 40 of the 50 highest engagement Facebook posts about immigration. And these are accounts that lean heavily on politically loaded phrases like migrant caravans, illegals, crisis. They portray immigrants as criminals or as bringing disease. They call the U.S. borders open. And when this kind of language dominates online, it also often seeps into mainstream use, which can lead to hate speech and violence against those communities. I know Laura is going to talk more about some solutions and what social media platforms can do. Let me just say that until the platforms do more to stop hate speech and disinformation, it's going to be hard to solve this problem entirely. But there are a few things I think can help to mitigate the harm facing these communities. The first is that mainstream information sources just need to be aware of the traps that anti-immigration groups are using social media to lay. This means, you know, avoiding loaded, politically charged language like migrant caravan, and to be careful about phrases like border crisis that can oversimplify what's happening. We need more accurate information in both English and other languages like Creole about the process to legally seek asylum, to push back against misleading claims that the border is simply open for people to enter. The American public in particular needs more information about the root causes of Haitian migration, to counter conspiracies about why this is happening. And just in general, we need more humanizing stories to counter the harmful tropes of immigrants as criminals, as bringing disease, as looking for unfair handouts. These are the tropes that are actively forming right now as a result of widespread social media disinformation. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey. And now let's hear from Stephanie Valencia, president and co-founder of Equis Lab. Equis Lab has been at the forefront of really monitoring and tracking and creating and trying to create solutions for targeted disinformation to Latino voters amongst the many voters who have been being targeted by right-wing entities and others. So let's hear from Stephanie. Stephanie?
Thanks, Beatrice. This is Stephanie Valencia. I'm the co-founder of Equis Labs. We have spent a lot of the last 2 years really studying the disinformation ecosystem as it relates to disinformation that is spread and targeted toward Latinx people here in the U.S., but also kind of Spanish, both in English and in Spanish. So we know, everything that everybody has already outlined, we agree with. I think what I would just emphasize is the kind of spread of disinformation specifically targeting Latino voters and Spanish dominant people here in the U.S. Because it is what we believe is so much worse in Spanish and is going unchecked by the platforms. We know that disinformation knows no borders and it flows freely across the entire Western Hemisphere. We are up and against an entire continent of Spanish language disinformation here in the United States, again, because disinformation knows no borders. We're just kind of wrapping our heads around, and I think yesterday's revelations from the Facebook whistleblower really kind of highlighted the kind of incentive structure that exists within these platforms. So the kind of content that is spread more rapidly through their algorithm. And so we're only kind of beginning to really understand the incentive structures that exist in these platforms and understand what it will take to really fight disinformation in English not to mention what it will take to actually underscore and tackle it in Spanish as well. And we believe through our research and the work we have done over the last 2 years that while there has been outsized attention focused on English language disinformation, much of what is happening in the Spanish language disinformation space is largely going unchecked by the platforms. There's a lot more we believe they can be doing. They have not exactly been forthcoming in the kind of resources that they are dedicating to tracking and monitoring disinformation internally, the kind of human, capital that is being dedicated to addressing this. So I will say that, we, as folks on this call have already kind of highlighted, there are kind of two really critical areas that we know that Spanish language disinformation has been particularly problematic. One is around how it has been spread and used. As the previous speaker, as Kelsey just talked about, platforms via Facebook and WhatsApp on, untrue things related to work here in the U.S. And, they've really benefited kind of human smugglers and coyotes and others who are trying to take advantage of people who are really suffering and trying to flee their countries and their circumstances. The second is how disinformation is really being used to create wedge issues among Latino voters here in the U.S. We have seen over and over again racist tropes being spread in Latino Facebook groups, racial undertones being used to create racial tension between Black and Latino communities over the course of the last year, particularly at the height of the George Floyd protests last summer. There are just a number of ways that we have seen that show up, even in the last couple of weeks as well. The racialization of the imagery from the border being spread in kind of in coordinated ways across and in different kind of in different Latino Facebook groups and among different Latino Facebook pages. So that is what we have been seeing over the last several years now. It is something that we continue to monitor and flag for the platforms to take down channels and distribution points that we believe are problematic in sharing disinformation or misleading information or hate speech. And we will continue to do that. We look forward to working with friends in Congress who are working to shine a light on this issue. People like Senator Ben Ray Lujan, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, Senator Alex Padilla, who have all been outspoken on this issue and hope to shine more light on it in order to bring more platform accountability and honesty about the scope of the problem and how they are tackling it.
Thank you, Stephanie. Very important. And just good timing, Laura Edelson, co-director of Cybersecurity for Democracy, will also talk about the threat of this lack of transparency. In fact, you might have seen her. She was at the House Science Committee hearing where she testified on this issue. So, Laura, I'll hand it over to you now.
Thanks. So what I want to talk about today is how the findings in the Tech Transparency Project's report are really part of the larger problem on Facebook and what we need to do to start addressing the problems of harmful user content. So what we are learning about in this report is a direct consequence of Facebook's prioritization of user engagement and its own reputation over the basic safety of users, particularly non-US and non-English speaking users. This issue has come into focus because over the last several weeks, we have been learning about how conscious, how intentional this prioritization was. But independent researchers like Katie have been telling Facebook about these kinds of problems for years. And the company was often able to brush off these criticisms because they often relate to users in locations that don't have strong tech regulatory bodies. You know, we've learned that only 13% of Facebook spending on integrity efforts are for outside the United States, even though non-US users represent 93% of Facebook's user base. Facebook has shown, in this and in many other ways, that it just can't be trusted to police itself. That's clear from revelations on how management ignored its own researchers, you know, how it shares partial faulty data with the public and with researchers, and how it goes after independent researchers like me by cutting off our access to data. So, you know, what would solutions look like? You know, so we have three ideas just to get things started. So first, Facebook needs to start making much more information about public content on its platform available to researchers so that they can do the job that Facebook is unwilling to do. So I think that obviously my own accounts should be reinstated, that of the other researchers on my team, and Facebook should widen access to tools like CrowdTangle to a much broader swath of researchers immediately. Second, Facebook needs to make some fundamental changes. First, they need to properly staff and resource the teams that are dedicated to protecting user safety globally. They need to improve their policies to more clearly ban groups and pages like this that trade on human misery. And in general, it just needs to stop promoting content based on user engagement, something that at this point both my own independent research and Facebook's internal research has shown promotes misinformation and is harmful to users. Third, and most importantly, Congress needs to act. Congress needs to pass comprehensive platform transparency and accountability legislation. And I think of this as probably needing three pillars to get started. We need public transparency of public content, especially for ads, but also for public content with meaningful reach more broadly. We need a researcher safe harbor law, so that more independent research like this can go on without legal threats from platforms. And lastly, we need a mechanism to allow for independent auditing and research to ensure that user safety on social media platforms, because I think we are all concerned about the fact that platforms don't seem to have, one, an incentive to do this work as rigorously as they should, and two, have a pretty strong incentive to sweep it under the rug when it happens. So we think that these would go a long way to improving conditions for all users online. And with that, I think I can hand it back to Beatrice.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for that. Now I'm going to open it up for questions. I know we have some reporters on the line, so I want to make sure if you guys have any follow-up questions, we can get to do that. Gretchen, if you could provide any other instructions. So folks could ask her.
Yes, absolutely. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. It looks like we have a question from Sandra Sanchez. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I'm covered the border in South Texas. Question, you mentioned some of the Latin American countries have Facebook as their internet service. Could you name these countries? Are any of these like the Northern Triangle countries, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador? And just kind of explain a little bit more how that is influencing what's going on right now. Thank you.
Yes, I can take that. It's not that they have Facebook as their internet service. Starting in 2014, Facebook had a program called Internet.org, which it later renamed to Free Basics, where Facebook would partner with telecom providers in developing countries and essentially offer a truncated version of its apps only for zero-rated data, which meant that people in developing areas that did not have access to Wi-Fi or internet could use data for free to access Facebook. But Facebook's internet expansion only worked for its apps. This meant that authoritative sources of information on other apps like Google or different news apps would not be accessible for zero-rated data, only Facebook and WhatsApp. We have a June report that we published on our website, which has a table showing all of the Latin American countries that had this zero-rated data at the time. This is about 2016. It included Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Jamaica, Mexico, Nicaragua, Paraguay, Peru, and Trinidad and Tobago. If you look at the chart, you'll see that WhatsApp and Facebook are essentially the two primary apps that are permitted to be used through this, which means that Facebook really owns the use of these apps in Latin America over any other issues. As a result, because you cannot access other authoritative sources of information, Facebook becomes the default internet in many of these countries because people don't have other means of accessing it. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, that explains a lot. Thank you. And you have specific websites in which you monitor or channels within Facebook in which you monitor smugglers' cartel activity in which they are advertising for trafficking, right?
Yes, we're in several Facebook groups for human smuggling. These are not just run by cartels. There are people affiliated with cartels that are in these groups that also operate human smuggling because of the way certain territories on the border are controlled by different criminal organizations. But these groups, we just released this, our latest report about a week or so ago, which covered the fact that these groups are still being created even after we've sent Facebook Excel documents with links to lists of Facebook groups and pages. The groups are explicit as Immigrant Caravan 2021, where they're planning upcoming caravans and announcing which countries they're coming from. And that's in Spanish, of course. But these are, this is just an example of the fact that the company is not even doing the most basic searches to run and remove this kind of content. And as a result, it's really serving as a megaphone for human smuggling.
Thank you. And that was Katie Paul with the Tech Transparency Project. Okay. Do we have another question?
Once again, that is star and one. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And it appears that we have no further questions at this time.
Great, thank you. Well, you know, leave it at that. I don't know if anybody has any other last closing remarks they would like to say. I'll leave the floor open just in case. Okay, well, if not, then we will close on this and just be on the lookout. We will provide links to the Tech Transparency Report, other information, incredible information that each of these groups have put together, including us at the Hub and America's Voice, which we recently put out a report sort of laying out more of this tracking volume and its impact. But we'll be sure to provide these resources and continue to update folks as we move forward. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a great day.